Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome to our second hour of Catholic Answers Live. So happy you're able to join us. Dr. Stacy Trusenkos is our guest this hour, and we're talking any question that you have on the relationship between faith and science. A full hour of open forum on questions on faith and science. This seems to be consistently and maybe persistently, I will say, because sometimes there's this idea out there that there is a war between religion and science, or there's some kind of battle going on, and we're not experiencing the battle here. I mean, we don't feel like we're at war with science. So give us a call, 888-318-7884 with your questions or comments about science and faith, 888-318-7884. Dr. Trusenkos earned her bachelor's degree in science from East Texas State University, a doctorate in chemistry from Penn State University, and a master's degree in dogmatic theology from Holy Apostles College and Seminary. She's the author of Science Was Born of Christianity and the very popular Particles of Faith, a Catholic Guide to Navigating Science, that if you were listening to Trent Horn earlier this week, he was recommending that book to folks, Particles of Faith, A Catholic Guide to Navigating Science. She and her husband, Jose, have 7 children, and they live in Texas. And Dr. Trusenkos, how are you?
Oh, I'm great. Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, we're happy to have you, but are you in the part of Texas that got affected by that hurricane? Texas is huge, so are you not in the affected area?
Not in the affected area. We are too far north.
Oh, good. All right. So you're dry and you're...
We're dry.
All right. Very good. I'm glad to hear it. Let me ask you about the conflict thesis about faith and science before we go to calls, because I suppose there will, and we welcome your call. We really do. If you believe that there is some kind of conflict between faith and science, we'd love to discuss that with you. But I suppose there will be people who will listen and say, they just won't give it a rest. These Christians, science has made their faith obsolete. Why do we have to have a talk about faith and science?
Oh, hello. Are you there?
Yo, yes.
Oh, okay. I thought I lost.
No, I thought you quit. I thought you gave up on being Catholic there. You were like, he's right. I'm leaving. I quit.
But I don't know why we have to have a conflict between faith and science.
Okay.
I don't know. People take science to be the search for truth that I think that faith is really supposed to be. And there seems to be a conflict because people think you have to choose one or the other, and they don't understand that actually science in the light of faith is a wonderful way to look at science, and they don't understand that science can also help enrich our faith. So they go together very well. That doesn't mean, though, I've learned to be quick to say, that doesn't mean, I don't mean to just sweep under the rug the actual controversies that are there, because there are some difficult issues that need to be discussed. But I think they have to be discussed with the understanding that, like the church says so often, truth does not contradict truth. So it's not a matter of there actually being a way that science could prove what's divinely revealed wrong. And there's not a way that there would actually be a conflict where you had to pick one or another. It's just that we don't have all the answers. We're at this moment in history. We know what we know. And there's just a lot of scholarship that needs to go on in the coming years to keep probing these questions and to learn more. So I think it's a very exciting thing. And I think a lot of people have that same view. More and more, there are groups that are discussing the intersection of faith and science.
Can a healthy faith environment, a society that's got a healthy Christian faith, be a good place for fostering science, though? Or would we say it would be better for science, to be in a secular, non-faith environment? I suppose so it could do whatever it wants.
Right. And I totally disagree with that. One of the causes I champion, probably the cause I champion, is to raise an army of future faithful scientists, people who are guided by their faith. I work with a lot of young people, and I understand that the only way to really progress in science is to have both a firm understanding of the ethics and the morals and where we're going as a human race and where we're supposed to be going, taking care of the planet, taking care of ourselves and each other. You need that guidance in science. And I mean, in the secular world, the people who are pushing progress in science, who don't really understand morals and ethics and don't have a foundation there, they don't know where they're going with it. Like they don't know what end they're trying to pursue. And Catholics do. We have a very clear picture of that. And also, we have a very clear picture of creation. Almost any scientist, whether they're atheist or religious, even the most stringent atheist scientist has to look at the universe as a creation. You have to look at the world and say, you know, this is not something that's on par with God or some godlike being organism. You have to look at the world as something created with order so that you can do science and go out there and discover the laws of nature.
888-318-7884, our number if you'd like to talk with Dr. Trusenkos about this issue of faith and science, the intersection of faith and science. It's an open forum, so any question you've got on faith and science is welcome. 888-318-7884. We need a theologian for this talk, and we need a scientist. And so we smushed a theologian and scientist into one person. And lots of calls, Doctor. You ready? Shall we just go straight to the phones?
Sure.
All right. Rachel in Champaign, Illinois, listening on 95.7 FM. You are on with Dr. Stacy Trusenkos. Your question, please.
Yes. I'm a convert, and as a Protestant, I was taught very strongly in creationism and the literal interpretation of Genesis 1. But as a Catholic, it seems like there's some conflict with that. I'm not sure exactly what the church teaching is on evolution versus creationism. Could you explain that?
Absolutely. That's one of the things I talk about most. I'm a chemist, but I understand this from the perspective of creation doing its thing. And the church does not have any problem with the theory of evolution so long as in exploring the theory of evolution, you don't deny the truths of faith. And that's pretty straightforward. You can't deny the human soul. Like you can't say that the human person evolved from inanimate matter and from non-human beings. You can't say that evolution explains our intelligence and our free will. You can't deny the human soul. And we're not going to do that anyway. You also can't use evolution to say that proves that God did not create everything, that everything just evolved and God wasn't needed. You can't go there either. But that's unreasonable to do that anyway. We don't. But then when you get into the harder questions like what do you make of Neanderthals and what do you make of these scientific papers that say that humans and Neanderthals mated and how do you reconcile that with Adam and Eve, there's actually a very, very lively discussion going on within the Catholic Church to understand that. Catholic theologians and the Magisterium and the Pontifical Academy of Sciences, they're not afraid to explore those questions. That's the only way you can dig further into the mystery and truth, is to ask those questions and figure out what they're saying, to listen to the scientists, to understand what they're learning from genetics and the fossil record, and to understand the story that anthropologists are trying to tell and see what you can learn about what it means to be human from that, but then also tie that together and look at it in the light of faith. And there's frankly nothing out there in evolutionary theory at all that causes us to deny even the existence of Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve would have lived in such a short time span, a blip on the evolutionary scale, that we would the science would never be able to find them anyway. And so there's no problem. I teach my children about Adam and Eve from the Baltimore Catechism. I also teach them about evolution, and they also have lots and lots and lots of questions, but we talk about it.
Rachel, how does that strike you?
Well, we didn't evolve from apes. I mean, isn't there parts of evolution that kind of if you take it, do you have to swallow the whole thing? And does that mean that we came out of mutations and death as opposed to the spoken word of God?
Right. Evolutionary theory would suggest that that Homo sapiens evolved from ape-like creatures. So not apes, but yeah, if you go far enough back in the evolutionary trail, you would logically come even to the first cell. You would come to inanimate matter, giving rise to the first living things. And there's nothing in that that contradicts anything about our faith. I mean, matter, and it even says in magisterial documents, matter could have evolved to rise up to life and then give rise to the human race. But you can't, in exploring those questions, you can't ever deny the human soul. So at some point, there was human persons, bodies with human souls. But yeah, those are the questions people get really uncomfortable with if you're not used to thinking about it. Like, does it mean your ancestors were apes? Does it mean your ancestors were single cells? Well, I mean, if you go far enough back, our bodies are made out of atoms. So it's not unreasonable to think that, you know, your skin, your air you're breathing right now, it's made of atoms that make up molecules that make up the tissues and the organs that make up you. So it's not unreasonable to follow that all the way back and say that life rose from inanimate matter as a matter of science.
Rachel, thanks very much for the call. We have to take a quick break. Lots and lots of folks on the call, but we do have, on the line, but we do have one line open for anyone who would like to get on with Dr. Stacey Trusankos and talk about faith and science. 888-318-7884, the number. I am Cy Kellett, your host. This is Catholic Answers Live, and we'll be right back.
Join us on air today on Catholic Answers Live.
It might be said that anti-Catholic notions of the Church's history are the original fake news. With all the misinformation being spread, where does one look for the truth? In The Real Story of Catholic History, Professor Steve Weidenkopf gives you the facts on over 50 of the most common misconceptions about Catholic history and shows how to answer them simply and powerfully. Whether it's to answer claims about Catholicism's supposedly pagan origins, old myths about the Inquisition that never seem to go away, or more modern errors that anti-Catholics put forth, The Real Story of Catholic History is an essential resource for every Catholic's bookshelf. Order your copy of The Real Story of Catholic History today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking new resource by apologist Trent Horn. That one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into or back to the practice of the Catholic faith. Don't miss out on the most important, life-changing book to come along in years. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Pope Francis said, "All of us are called to mature in our work as evangelizers. We want to have better training, a deepening love, and a clearer witness to the gospel." St. Paul Street Evangelization's online School of Evangelization will equip you with the tools you need to be an effective evangelist. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you're unable to give, we'll set you up for free. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We're getting ready for the conference around here, so there's all kinds of busyness going on. One of the nice things is some people who have come in early for the conference have stopped by to visit us in the studio. Donna and Margo are here. Margo gave us a little outro in the last hour. Maybe Donna will come in and give us an outro this hour. That's, you know, when you leave the segment to go to the commercial, they'll lead us into the break. But it's very nice to have visitors here, and you're always welcome. Anybody, if you're in the San Diego area and you can get out to El Cajon and come by, we'd love to have you visit while we're doing the show. That's always fun for us. 888-318-7884 is our number right now. We're talking about faith and science with Dr. Stacey Trusankos, and lots and lots of calls. So we go now to Michelle in New Orleans, Louisiana, listening on Catholic Community Radio. Michelle, your question for Dr. Drasenkos.
Hello. I'm a strong Catholic, but I have a lot of atheist friends, and many of them seem to have this question about how, on the one hand, we say, you know, we live in this fallen, broken world ever since Adam and Eve, and that's why we have death and disease. But from an evolutionary standpoint, there's always been death and disease and everything in the world. So how do those go together?
Okay, that's a great question. Can you hear me? Because I think my internet just blipped.
No, we hear you fine. Yeah.
Okay, good. As long as you can hear me. So that's a great question. And people ask that question a lot. If death did not enter the world until the fall, then what about dinosaurs? Was there death with carnivorous beings before pre-humans? I go back to Romans 5:12. St. Paul the Apostle said, by one man sin entered the world, and by sin death, and so death passed upon all men, in whom all have sinned. The Council of Trent taught that the first man, Adam, transgressed the commandment of God in paradise and immediately lost his holiness. And in doing so, he incurred, quoting, through the offense of that prevarication, the wrath and indignation of God, and hence the death with which God had previously threatened him. So the words, hence the death that God threatened, are important, just as the distinction, all men. So Adam's sin is threatened, transmitted death to mankind, but not to animals. So death was always natural for animals. It's how they were created. Man was created for everlasting life through grace, but because of the fall, death entered for mankind. So the origin of death, that man was endowed with the preternatural gift of bodily immortality in paradise, we lost that with original sin.
Michelle, you still with us?
Yes.
Does that address your question?
If I could ask a quick follow-up.
Sure.
Yeah, that all makes sense. But also, how can we say the world is created good and ordered when it's ordered towards this disease and death sprouting up in most of the world besides humans?
Yeah, so how come there's death at all if the world is created good and ordered? I look at it like this. It's the answer to suffering to me comes from the same place that the Maccabees mother did. When her seven sons were dying, which is the greatest suffering I can imagine, she looked out at the universe and she said, God created all of this and he gave us the breath of life. And she had faith that if God can take all that matter and make everything, then surely that everything will be okay. Then surely he will give us back the breath of life. Surely there's everlasting life. And she had faith because she looked at the natural world. And I like to look at it that way because there is plenty of, you know, we all suffer in life. We're all going to, and there's going to be death and there's going to be destruction. But I think sometimes it's just that we can't see past it all. I think if we have faith, we can have faith that in the end, everything is going to be okay.
Michelle, thank you very, very much for that call. We move on now to Alex in New York, listening on WOPG. Alex, your question for Dr. Drasenkos.
Hi, doctor. Thank you so much. What an awesome program. I have a question for you. I'm going to frame it in this context. I'm trying to do some evangelizing in my family, and the woman that I have in mind is a Gnostic, and the Gnostic faith teaches more or less that the world and matter and things like that are negative and things like that. So it's not really a positive outlook on things like that. And she insists that there is like an extra layer to reality, which is beyond physical matter, which is, you know, composed entirely of the spiritual. And that's kind of on the plate. And I wanted to bring her closer to the Catholic faith again. So I was wondering, in what way could I frame an argument that would entice her to perhaps take a second look at the church? Thank you.
Oh, I think that's a great question, and I think she's very close. And so I would start letting her know that you're open to having conversations with her about that. But we do, as Catholics, believe there is a separate sphere of reality that is a spiritual sphere. We do believe that there is the natural and the supernatural. I was just reading St. Thomas Aquinas on his treatise on the angels, and he says there are three layers. There's the angels, which are purely spiritual creatures. There's man, which is a composite, which is spiritual and bodily. And then there are the animals, which are bodily. And so there is, like, angels are not physical. They're not energy. They are completely separate. They are spiritual. Our soul is spiritual. Our soul is not explained by matter at all. And so we very much believe in both. It's not that we say that we have to be spiritual. It's like the reason and faith thing, the science and faith. We don't think that you have to just believe there's a spiritual realm. We say we believe in our faith because of what God revealed, that there is a spiritual realm and a physical material realm. And so we look to what we can learn about both of those things. So the human person is the composite body and soul.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Alex. Appreciate that call. 888-318-7884. Our number, we're talking faith and science today with Dr. Stacy Trusankos, a scientist and theologian and the author of Particles of Faith, a Catholic Guide to Navigating Science. The lines keep filling up quickly, so dial if you'd like to get in before the top of the hour, 888-318-7884. We go now to another anonymous caller, Anonymous in Anonymous. Your question for Dr. Trusankos, Anonymous, Anonymous.
Thank you for taking my call. It may just be that I'm not exactly a science whiz, but it also may be that I just misunderstood what you said earlier about inanimate matter giving rise to life, that can be explained scientifically. I don't see how, if you don't believe that there's an intelligent creator.
Right. Are you finished? Okay. I didn't want to jump in before you. Yes. What I mean by that is that scientists naturally look for how did life evolve? How did life first rise from inanimate matter? And so, like in biochemistry textbooks, biology textbooks, you will see chapters about the beginning of life. How did life begin? They're asking the question, like, from what elements and from what early molecules and from what conditions, chemically speaking, did the first biomolecule start to form, and did the first organism start to organize? And none of that requires, I mean, that only gives further testimony to the fine-tuning and the creator's hand, that God would create a world that has elements and atoms and molecules that can actually do that. When I read in, like, the biochemistry textbooks, the biology textbooks, they're not saying anything against God. They're saying, you know, there's all this diversity of life we see in the world today. How did that start? Where did it come from? And there are theories about, like, the primordial soup you've heard of and stuff like that, and lightning hitting it. But there are chemical answers for that, chemical theories about it. Those textbooks also say that we may never know actually how the first life forms rose. But that doesn't mean that we can't ask the questions and try to figure it out.
Does that address your concern, Anonymous?
Well, actually, I'm familiar with the primordial soup. But it's a huge stretch for me to go from that to even, say, like a prokaryotic cell, which is very simple. But if you break it down, mm-hmm. just the order that needs to, you know, be in place in order for that cell to function and live, and, you go from mitosis,
right.
Just from splitting.
Yeah. Anonymous, if I could just ask, because we're just running short of time, are you of the view that God intervened directly, miraculously, to create the first life?
I fail to understand how it could be otherwise.
I see. But failing to understand, I mean, everyone fails to understand. Nobody understands how it could have happened. That's a kind of a blank spot in our knowledge. But not knowing is not the same as saying it's impossible that God had created a universe in which life would form.
Okay. Well, I've been out of school a long time, and what I'm remembering from science books, the explanation was made.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
it's not.
You know, I was watching a thing on PBS where the scientist said, some guy from Harvard, he said, we know there was a date on which there was no life on the Earth, and we know there was a date maybe a million years later where there was life on Earth. We have no clue what happened in the middle. And does that state the current state of the science, Dr. Jasenkos?
Yes, we aren't sure. I mean, I love that the textbooks, even the secular textbooks, say that. They say great mysteries remain. We'll never know exactly how life arose. But I think it's a very, very fun and interesting question to ask, how might molecules have organized to give rise to the first life form? For me, it's just a way to understand creation better, what God did here when he created this world that we live in.
But our listener, our anonymous listener, is perfectly within her rights as a Catholic to say, I believe God miraculously originated life on this earth. That's perfectly okay to say.
Yes, you can. Yes. And you really have to wonder, what are you saying about a miracle there? Because at some point you could say that all life is a miracle.
Yeah, the whole deal is a miracle. If you go back to the Big Bang. Dr. Stacey Trisankos is our guest. Faith and science is our topic. We'll be right back with more after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Listening to Catholic Answers Live.
It might be said that anti-Catholic notions of the Church's history are the original fake news. With all the misinformation being spread, where does one look for the truth? In The Real Story of Catholic History, Professor Steve Weidenkopf gives you the facts on over 50 of the most common misconceptions about Catholic history and shows how to answer them simply and powerfully. Whether it's to answer claims about Catholicism's supposedly pagan origins, old myths about the Inquisition that never seem to go away, or more modern errors that anti-Catholics put forth, The Real Story of Catholic History is an essential resource for every Catholic's bookshelf. Order your copy of The Real Story of Catholic History today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Hi, this is Trent Horn, and I'm here to tell you about my new book, Hard Sayings, A Catholic Approach to Answering Bible Difficulties. Have you ever read something in the Bible that confused you? Or has a skeptic ever asked you to explain a scandalous passage and you didn't know what to say? Doesn't Genesis contradict science? Why does the Bible promote slavery? How could God order his people to kill women and children? It's happened to just about everyone. But now you have a place to turn for the answers. In Hard Sayings, I look at dozens of the most confounding passages in Scripture and offer clear, reasonable, and Catholic keys to unlocking their true meaning. After reading this book, you'll be equipped to answer the toughest questions skeptics ask about the Bible. So don't be left without an answer again. Order your copy of Hard Sayings today by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Anna Mitchell.
I had this formative experience during one Sunday Mass in the Easter season in seventh grade. During the Gloria, I remember having this sense of being filled. If you can imagine what it must feel like to be a cup being filled with water, that's how it felt. It started at my feet and it moved up my body. And I've come to believe that that was the Holy Spirit. And I can really trace my zeal for the faith back to that moment.
The Sunrise Morning Show, Monday through Friday at 6 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We're having a superpower hour this hour. Open forum on faith and science. Lots of people want to talk about faith and science. I do think it is one of the hot topics of our day. Our number is 888-31-TRUTH. Our guest is Dr. Stacey Trisankos, author of Particles of Faith, A Catholic Guide to Navigating Science. And we go now to Patricia in San Francisco, California, listening on Immaculate Heart Radio. Patricia, your question for Dr. Trisankos.
Yes, before I ask my question, I just want to make a statement. God is outside the outside of time. The Son of God demonstrated God's ability to override the natural order by walking on water, raising the dead, changing water to wine. So God's power is outside the natural the natural realm. So anyway, my question is, when I read the Bible, I read somewhere that 1,000 years is as one day to God. And when I read Genesis, God made the world in 7 days. I interpret that based on other scriptural passages. It could be like 7,000 years. Is that possible, do you think?
Yeah, I don't think it's meant to mean a literal day as we understand it now. It's meant more as periods or phases or categories, just a way to differentiate one phase from another. I mean, I was even reading St. Augustine and St. Thomas Aquinas. I was reading The City of God and then, again, the Treatise on Angels the other day, and even they were saying the same thing. So even back in the 4th century, you know, St. Augustine was saying the same thing, that it's not a literal day, that they're periods of who knows how much time.
Patricia, does that address what your question?
Yeah, it does. All right. Thank you much.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Patricia.
It's striking when you read Genesis how the first 11 chapters go along, and they're very strange language. It's obvious that something even beyond poetic or mythic is going on here. These are very fundamental truths about what we are as human beings. And then in the 12th chapter, Abraham is introduced, and now we're in a concrete history in a different way. Do you read Genesis the same way?
Yeah, I read Genesis like this. Like, I don't read it literally. I read it for the real truth that's there. Like, what's the big story about it? I mean, Father Stanley Yawkey, who I study, I mean, one of his teachings was that the real message there is the Sabbath day, that God rested on the Sabbath. And I was reading that in the Catechism this morning. It says the same thing. That's one of the things from Genesis that we need to take very seriously, that natural order in the way that we live out our lives, that we work and that we honor the holy day and rest from our work.
I'm glad that I hadn't actually thought of that. I'm glad that I like that seventh day rest.
I do too.
Idea. That's a good one. Now that's a caring God, the God that will give you a day off every week. Again, 888-318-7884 is the number. And to say that something is not to be taken with absolute literal certainty is not to say it's not true. For example, I mean, I could say, someone could say, how many people are coming to the conference? There's like a million people coming. It's not literally true that there's like a million people coming, but you know what I mean when I speak that way. So non-literal language is also truthful language. It's just telling the truth in a different way. Yes. Ken, in Tulsa, Oklahoma, listening on St. Michael Radio, you are on with Dr. Stacy Trusenkos. Your question, please.
Yes, thank you, Doctor. I'm not sure that you'd be familiar with Hugh Owens and some of his writings at the Kolbe Center. We heard him talk, and one of the things he talked about was evolution versus creation. I picked up a book written by John Wynn, and then I put it down, and then I'm going to pick it back up again. It's called A Catholic Assessment of Evolution Theory. I guess my question is, are you familiar with that? Because he goes into this whole argument against Darwin and carbon dating and the limitations of that really supports creation. And I just didn't know what your feelings were on that.
Yes, I am familiar with the Kolbe Center. They've written a long response to some of the things I've said. I don't agree with them. I mean, I don't have a problem talking to them about it, and you know, it's not. There's no animosity there, but I don't agree with them. I don't agree with this approach to the question where you just can't accept evolution. You just fundamentally think that evolutionary theory contradicts our faith, because you're just stopping the conversation, because most of what they do is they go and look at other ways that explain things. And for a long time, I didn't really want to pick a side. I listened to both sides, but I noticed that most of their arguments seem to start with the conclusion that you just can't accept evolution. And then they go about trying to prove otherwise. They probably wouldn't like it if to hear me say that. But that was where I came out after reading their work and their studies. It's just like they already decided that you can't accept evolution, that it has to be special creation. And I don't think it has to be special creation. I mean, when a child is born, that's a natural process, but it's no less a testament to the miracles and wonders of God. And when you look at the order in the natural world, it actually only makes sense to believe that God created it. And that only makes sense to believe that God can work miracles whenever he wants to, for the sake of our salvation. So I don't fundamentally start out saying it has to be creation over evolution.
Ken?
Okay. Well, yeah, thank you very much. That kind of answers my question. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you.
Thank you for that call. We go now to another anonymous caller. I don't know. People are very anonymous about their faith and science questions today. Anonymous in Las Vegas, Nevada, listening on EWTN. Your top secret question for Dr. Stacy Trusankos.
Hello?
Hi.
Hello? Okay. You're waking up. Okay. I'll be very quick. Now,
okay.
Adam and Eve, somebody said Adam and Eve had perfect, you know, they were the first, well, I would say perfect humans because they were made not to get sick and not to die. So maybe they probably lived for lots and lots and lots of years, thousands probably of years, and must have probably produced multitude of children, which also produced multitude of children and so on. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that, now my question is, scientists have said that, yeah, because many people think that probably they just died right after they fell into sin. But anyway, my question is, scientists could not prove, at least for now, could not prove that we or humans actually evolved from animals because of the missing link. Could you please elaborate on that missing link?
Okay, if I understand what you mean by missing link, you mean transitional fossils. And there are lists and lists and lists of transitional fossils that have been found. A transitional fossil is the remains of a life form that has traits common to an ancestral group and then traits common to a descendant group. And there are lots of those that have been found. As it relates to humans, what would you call the transitional fossils? I don't think they call them missing links or transitional fossils per se. But even if you just look on the Smithsonian website for the origin of man, they have a collection of all the fossils of not Homo sapiens, but all the other pre-humans that existed or that they found the fossil records of. And it makes sense. I mean, it fits together as a story. And there could have been life forms, beings that were very similar to the human body, but not human yet, not quite human. So there are fossils of that, so people don't accept that. There's a genetic record. People don't accept that either. So there are explanations for that. It really comes down to a matter of what you accept, though.
Anonymous, does that answer your question about the missing link?
I think what I remember was that when I was reading this article, what I remember is that scientists couldn't prove when the animals actually became humans. Like, there was that portion wherein they just couldn't prove that part. You know, they were like animal-like humans, but then, or maybe humans or animals that may have become, but that's that portion, and that's what I would like to understand more. And that's what they were saying about the missing link. But as I said, maybe, you know, Adam and Eve must have produced millions of children, but who knows? But anyway, the doctor could explain more on that. Yeah, at what point, like, they cannot prove, like, exactly, or at least maybe we'll never be able to prove, even when, if they don't believe, because I believe I didn't come from animals, but
well,
no one,
you mean the,
yeah.
You,
how do I know?
You're saying we won't be able to prove when exactly Adam and Eve lived, our first parents lived. And you said, Dr. Trusankos, that might actually be true.
That's okay.
We may never know that.
I don't think we ever will. I don't see how we could, because tools for evolution could never find just a single generation, much less a single couple.
I see. Right.
And what you're talking about, I think, are like the earliest humans and other primates. The longest chapter in my book is on evolution, and I do address that. I mean, it's a very long question to answer in a short format. But since about 10,000 years ago, there has been only one species and one subspecies of Homo sapiens, and that is our own. But before that, there's plenty of evidence of other species of the genus Homo that existed. And there's a lot, if you read the scientific papers on it, there's lots of explanations and trying to put the story together. But they know the story's not completely put together, but there's mountains of evidence for it.
Dr. Anonymous, thank you for the call. Dr. Stacy Trusenkos is our guest.
Thank
Her
you.
Book is Particles of Faith, A Catholic Guide to Navigating Science. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. The lines remain full, so we'll try to get to as many of these calls as we can.
We'll be right back with more after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Thanks, Donna.
This is Harry Connick Jr., and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Aren't faith and reason two separate and distinct kinds of truth? Why do Christians believe in the biblical creation story when science has disproved it? How can the modern world take religion seriously when they oppose scientific advancements like birth control and stem cell research? In 20 Answers, Faith and Science, you'll find smart, solid answers to these questions and many more, clearing away misconceptions and helping you to understand and explain to your friends and family the complex but ultimately harmonious relationship between religious and scientific truth. 20 Answers, Faith and Science is part of the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com and take a look at this exciting new series from Catholic Answers Press.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Luke 9, Jesus gave the 12 power and authority over all demons and to cure diseases, sending them to proclaim the kingdom of God and to heal the sick. He told them to take nothing for the journey, no walking stick, no sack, no food, no money, no second tunic. As with so many people in training, they really had little idea of what they were really preparing for. The day was to come for each of them when their very words would be so crucial to those who heard them that they would either be received with great joy or their very lives would be in jeopardy. Like them, as we prepare for the future by our present activity, so much mystery lies before us. Jesus has called us also to follow his lead, to trust him and be faithful. With the disciples, our future lies in our fidelity to him. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Wow, wow. We are finishing the show with more lines full than we started the show with. There's lots of people who want to talk about faith and science with our good friend, Dr. Stacy Trusenkos. Again, the author of Particles of Faith, A Catholic Guide to Navigating Science. Let's go right to the phones in order to try to work our way through as many of these calls as we can. John in Anaheim, California, listening on Immaculate Heart Radio. You are on with Dr. Stacy Trusenkos. Your question, please.
Yes. Hello, doctor. Yes, I've read your book. I'm curious about your concept of the system of wills, whether or not that is equivalent to what Thomas called the natural law.
Okay. I don't think I would quite make it the same. I don't think I would say it's quite the same thing, because when I read the arguments for natural law, I'm still trying to work out what I think or how I can rephrase those things. In the system of wills, I was trying to explain the natural and the supernatural, and how you can look at science and also understand that, like I said before, there's the physical world that God created, and it is pretty deterministic. But then there are also beings with will, like us. We have free will, and angels have free will, and God has will, is will and intellect, and that you can understand that when you see that the natural world, the atoms and molecules do their thing, that actually points us to belief in the supernatural, and it points us to belief in miracles. The only reasonable conclusion when you look at chemistry and physics is that there is a God, and that God is also capable of overriding the natural system because he created it to work miracles. So I was just trying to put all of that into context, mostly because of the arguments that say that science has proven there's no free will, and that our consciousness emerges from matter or from our brain, that we're only meat in our brain. We don't have a soul. I was trying to address how it's perfectly reasonable for a Catholic to believe, to look at the physical realm and to also look at the spiritual realm and to see how they fit together.
Okay, John?
Are you with Michael Hanby?
Michael Hanby?
Yes, I know him. I know of him. Okay. Acquaintance.
Okay. All right, because there seems to be a substantial gap between you and him,
yeah.
Especially in his book, No God, No Science, concerning Thomism in general and Neo-Thomism in particular.
Yes, and I don't deny natural law. I'm just saying me as a chemist and then someone who studied theology, I'm not personally quite sure that I understand natural law. Like when I read the philosophical arguments for natural law, and I've read some of his work, I've read some of Dr. Edward Fesser's work, and when I try to understand natural law, sometimes I think there are some logical gaps, which I would love to discuss with someone. I know that's a bit of a loaded statement, but I find some logical gaps in it that I'd like to smooth out or to clarify, because just looking at saying that certain beings act in certain ways and that's natural, I'm not sure that we know that. I'm not saying any of that in a way that would contradict anything of our faith. I'm just saying I think the natural law arguments could be improved.
We should have you on with Dr. Fazer sometimes, because he would be up to the challenge. He would love to have that conversation. It would be exciting. It would be. It's important for. I mean, one of the things that is important for us, if we're going to be grown-up Catholics, is to realize there's lots of things that are open to discussion and have discussions about them. It's perfectly fine to have a discussion about them. John in Anaheim, thank you very, very much. I will just make this one editorial comment, Dr. Trusenkos, because this drives me crazy. If someone believes that science has proved that there's no free will, they need to understand that if there's no free will, there's no science, because you wouldn't be able to do science if you didn't have the free will. It's not possible for science to have proved there's no free will. If it does, that means there's no science either. Marcia in Colorado Springs, Colorado, listening to EWTN on Sirius XM satellite radio. You are on with Dr. Stacy Trusenkos. Your question, please.
I like to combine the book of Genesis with science. It's something I've enjoyed since I was really young. And I've often thought when we say the creed at Mass and we refer to the Holy Spirit as the Lord, the giver of life, I'll think about the Spirit was moving over the face of the waters in chapter 1, verse 2. And then where it says in chapter 2, verse 7, then the Lord God formed man of dust from the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul. So I often wondered if the dust from the ground and then could maybe refer to the fact that we probably came from a lower life form and developed into Homo sapiens as we are today, and then the breath of life, and man became a living soul. Well, that's what we are, spiritual part, and I just wondered what you think about that.
Yeah, I think I'd like to hear more about what you're saying there. I think that's certainly one way to look at it. I don't see anything in there that contradicts anything that we believe in faith. You're saying that God's spirit was the moment of conception of everything. Like that was when God said, let there be. I think so. I think before I would, like, if I were going to explore that question myself, I think I would go back and read some more of the Catechism, and I would read St. Augustine's work, because he had some writing about about creation. And I always go back to St. Thomas. Whenever I have an idea like you're having now, I go look and see if somebody already said something about that and try to sort my thoughts out based on what was already written. But yeah, I see where you're going with that.
Marcia, thanks very much. It actually, in many ways, sounds like a beautiful reading of Genesis.
It does.
We go now to Michael in Monterey, California, listening on 1200 AM. Michael, your question for Dr. Stacy Trusenkos.
Like you, Doctor, I've studied both science and the Catholic Church having been born into a Catholic family. Let me tell you, the reality is we have not needed religion to explain where the sun is in the universe and the solar system, we are, nor the cause of diseases since the invention of the telescope and the microscope. And similarly, as Stephen Hawking says, would you agree with me that religion has become a crutch and manipulated people constantly, including this explanation that a God that we've never seen, that we can't really find, we can't identify or prove, has created this physical universe and this planet, all of which is explained, as Stephen Hawking says, from gravity and evolution. And as Hawking says, God and religion are both fairy tale fantasies and make-believe nonsense for adults no more provable now real than is the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus.
All right, Michael, that's a lot. I don't want to interrupt you. I do want it to be a conversation, however, and I don't want stuff to slip away. So let's give Dr. Trusenkos a chance to respond, and we won't just go away from you. I just want it to be a little conversation. Yeah. Dr. Trusenkos.
Yeah, I'll say that I've walked both sides of that fence because I was about as much a materialistic, non-religious person as you can get. I didn't even call myself atheist because I thought atheists too much followed a religion. I didn't think atheists did very much free thinking, to be honest. And I've walked both sides of that fence. And for me, it came down to all this stuff that you're saying, some of it may be true, but you can't put meaning and purpose on a balance and measure it. You can't find meaning and purpose in your life just in science. Science may tell us where the sun is, and science may tell us many, many things because it's wonderful, but it doesn't tell us what the meaning and purpose is in our life. And for me, at some point, life seemed really mechanical, flat, and dead. And I started searching for more answers. And when I get granted assent of my will to the Catholic faith, it was like I suddenly saw so much more of reality. I still love science just as much, even more actually. But there's so much more. My life is so much fuller now. I have answers to bigger questions, and I have more and more questions every day. So I much prefer this lifestyle to the way it was before.
Michael.
Your listeners to read Christopher Hitchens and just look at his YouTube presentations and buy his book, God is Not Great.
Don't buy that book.
But if you can get it for free. No, well, I mean, I'll just give a little plug for us here at Catholic Answers. We just did a great interview this week, a really great interview, not because the interviewer was great, but because the interviewee was great. And that was Ulrich Lehner. And he's written a book called God is Not Nice, which is kind of a response to Christopher Hitchens' book/screed, God is Not Great. I think, Michael, if you're still with us, if you stay with us, I think Dr. Trusenkos is saying, but she's heard the arguments or the comments, or in Hitchens's case, the smart aleck remarks, lots of them, that are supposed to shake us out of our faith. And it doesn't shake her faith because she does believe life has purpose and meaning. And those are not things that science can find anywhere. They have to be found by other means of the human mind.
Life has purpose living with ethics. Life has purpose living with compassion. The Catholic God is not necessary for any of that to be accomplished in your life.
I didn't find that to be the case. It's fine to say that you need ethics and you need morality, but what do you base it on? What do you ground it on? I mean, if morality can be anything that you want it to be, and I've been there, I'm a very logical person and I like to follow logic to its very last end. And I did that before I converted. And I saw where it went. It basically means you can do whatever you want. You really don't have to care about anything in the end.
Well, let me add that I was abused by a Catholic priest when I was a young boy. And that started my first questioning, how could any God be there who permits this?
Amen, bro.
I'm sorry.
Right.
Yeah.
That's horrible. And
horrible.
And I'm very sorry that that happened and that you lived through that. And there's no reason for us not to believe that. Do you recognize the possibility that such a traumatic, horrible, unfair, unjust experience might in fact create a resistance on your part to hearing about God?
No, it enlightened me to respect reality, thinking person's reality.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry about that. I wish we weren't just talking on a radio right now. I wish we could talk. I don't even know what to say to something like that. I'm very sorry.
I don't know that there's anything else we can say, Michael. I'm just as happy as can be that you
very
called.
Sorry.
I'm glad we could have
yes.
this conversation. You are welcome to call here anytime. I'm sorry that we have to say goodbye because the clock is ticking and we are about done. Dr. Stacey Trusankos, thank you so much for being with us for this hour. It's always a great hour when you're on.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Tomorrow, 2 hours, open forum right here. You don't want to miss that. Open forum. And Michael, if you want to call back tomorrow, open forum means anybody
sure.
can call. You don't have to be Catholic to call. And it's on any topic you want. Father John Trigilio will be here the second hour. First hour, Jimmy Akin will be here. And don't forget, coming up this Friday, we do the live show live in front of a live audience. About 1 million people will be there for the, is that right? For the Catholic Answers Conference. Are we expecting 1 million? Something like that. About 1 million. We'll see you then, and we'll see you again tomorrow, God willing, on Catholic Answers Live.